The Wright brothers never would have been the Wright sisters. We still would be grounded if we were waiting for women to figure out flying, right?
In a world where only the strong survive, there comes a time when the only way to settle the score is a one-on-one battle to the finish. Two entrepreneurs enter, but only one of them leaves. It's the Entrepreneur Showdown with Joe Cassandra and Dan Franks. Now, on to the showdown.
Happy New Year and happy Monday morning, everyone. It is time for the Entrepreneur Showdown podcast. I am Dan Franks, and coming on just a little bit, my partner in crime, Joe Cassandra. And thanks to everyone who gave us a shout and visited with us at New Media Expo this past weekend in Las Vegas. It was Joe and my first time at New Media Expo. And to say we had a blast in Las Vegas, our first trips to Vegas as well, that would be an understatement to say the least. So glad we got to meet a lot of you. Some of you guys that we missed, I'm sorry, but let's do it next year. How about that? So today in the showdown, though, we're going to get round one kicked off with some entrepreneurial mindset talk. Good way to start the new year. And we're going to ask the question, do you have the right mindset to succeed? So we're going to present this mindset talk a little differently than some of our other talks we've had in the past. So you want to stick around for that. Then in round two, we're going to have some fruit talk. That's right, fruits, and specifically pears. It'll make sense when you get to round two, but we're going to compare pears with getting things done, really being productive in this new year. So listen to round two and you'll see what we mean. And then in the main event, we're going to bring on the author of an article about pears and getting things done, Carrie Wilkerson. She is known as the Barefoot Executive. She is a ball of fire, to say the least. So if you're still a little groggy this Monday morning, stick around to the main event and Carrie will wake you up and get you motivated for the week ahead. But I don't want to waste any more time. For the show notes of today's episode and a whole lot more, you can head on over to entrepreneurshowdown.com. And now, let's get on with the showdown.
Round one.
For round one today, we're looking at a post by Laurel Staples, and she's at Go Fire Yourself. A very catchy title, I may add. But she has a post up called, Do You Have the Right Mindset You Need to Succeed? And we've talked about mindset a lot before, and sometimes maybe a little more than we want to, but it's just because it's that key. And especially when you're starting off and you're always going to have doubts creep in more than actual success thoughts. I mean, you'll see yourself being successful, but once you start thinking about the process to get there, you'll always, the doubts are going to creep in more than the success. But she has three tips for cultivating an entrepreneurial mindset. And again, I know we've talked about entrepreneurial mindset a lot, but it's always worth reiterating, especially since probably like a couple episodes have gone by since we've talked about it. But one of the first ones she mentions is listen more than you talk and learn to ask the right questions. And since we do an interview show, I think we already passed this first tip, wouldn't you say so? We already know how to ask the right question.
Yeah, so that's good for us, but you know, a lot of the people listening, they're not podcasters yet, although a lot of people are becoming that now. But a lot of them, you know, maybe don't know, hey, how can I get myself in a position to, you know, be in these interactive environments? Which first, I think maybe listening to podcasts, that can fall right into this. If you're listening more than you talk and you're, that's kind of that first part. So listening to the right podcast, listening to podcasts where you can learn things from and not just, you know, entertainment, or maybe hopefully like we're doing, kind of provide both entertainment and knowledge and value. But then kind of figuring out what you need to do to put yourself in the right situations to be able to ask questions, because that's the second part of this tip, is learn to ask the right questions. So to me, this can be anything from meetups to networking events, anything like that, where you can just put yourself in position to be interacting with smart people. I mean, heck, there's all kinds of Google Hangouts and online meetups going on multiple times per week. If you just kind of check out Twitter and follow along with some of your favorite bloggers, they're doing it. So I think maybe just finding a way to put yourself in this position is as important as, you know, actually doing it.
One thing a lot of people mention about social media is don't just be a soapbox and talk about all your own content and everything like that, but actually try and talk about other people as well. And that's not listening, but that's not talking about yourself, which is a big point she's talking about. And for me, I feel like when I meet people, I'm actually pretty good about this because I don't like talking about myself. I like to be the center of attention, but I don't like to talk about myself. I don't know if that makes sense, but usually I'm pretty good at leading a conversation and just asking about them and then digging in from there. But I think it takes some practice to do it, because usually when you're nervous with meeting someone, you're just looking for anything to say. And usually what's already at the top of your mind is yourself, of course, because it's all about me, me, me. So that's what a lot of people get sucked into. Or I don't know about you, but I know sometimes when I ask someone, well, like, what do? They go off on like a tangent for an hour that's not really what I want.
Well, and so it's interesting because there's a couple different things you can accomplish with these interactions. So if you can do something that gets other people talking, maybe if you're not even getting value, they're perceiving that the conversation is going really well. I don't know if you've ever sat in a job interview and the person conducting the interview actually does more talking than you, who's the one being interviewed. That's actually a positive. And if you can get that other person talking about themselves, they come out of that conversation thinking that it was really productive. So if this is somebody that you're interacting with that maybe you just want to, you know, make a connection with and build a good rapport with, then getting them talking, regardless of what it is, they're going to have that perceived value from the conversation and it'll help you. But if you're actually, you know, trying to get in this mindset like Laurel's talking about in this article, then yeah, that's probably not the right kind of conversation. And you talking about the social media and getting on the soapbox and kind of talking about me, 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 all yourself. I heard something Peter Shankman said recently. He said the worst part about social media is that the word me is in it, because everyone kind of takes that to heart and everyone just makes it about them. Whereas if you really change the mindset of like, okay, I'm going to get on Twitter and I'm going to see what I can do to answer questions for my audience or provide value for other people, or same thing on Facebook or whatever this social media platform is. If you just change your mindset, here we are talking about mindset, to be, you know, giving instead of taking, then I think that's putting yourself in the perfect position to, you know, take advantage of it.
Yeah, well, just since we're talking about the me thing, like if you just like go on Facebook, like your status update is, well, what are you doing right now? Or whatever that question is, what's on your mind at the moment? So of course you're going to be talking about yourself. And then, I don't know, that's what I always get cheesed about Facebook, is because everyone just says like all the happy things about their life, but you're never going to see the bad stuff, of course. But we've already focused about the first one, so let's grab the other two quick while we still have time. And the second one she talks about is focusing on the positive areas in your life and boot out the negatives. Now, you're always going to have people that are going to be those Debbie Downers, and I don't know, are they usually older people? I feel like they are. At least people I know. I feel like most of them that are like cynical or older people.
So are you saying these people, they maybe haven't accomplished what they wanted to in life, and so they've just slowly become bitter at everything, and so they they can't be optimistic about anything.
Exactly. And they want you to kind of feel that same way, even if they don't think that, they're subconsciously thinking that.
I don't know, Joe. I think you're being a little stereotypical there. I know we've met quite a few people that are older than us. I mean, shoot, even closer to our parents' age than our age at some of these meetups and networking events. And some of those people have the most fire out of anybody. I think it just depends on the person, because a lot of people they see, well, hey, I might be 20 years older than some of these younger guys that are just getting started, and I'm just getting started as well. But that just means I have to work twice as hard. You know, if they've got twice as long to accomplish what they're trying to do, that means I have half the time. So I need to, you know, bust my butt a little bit more. So I think sometimes you find the most motivated people that fit into that same category.
I disagree with that. But to continue on the negativity point, I know for me, usually when I woke up every day, the first thing I do is watch the news, of course. And I don't know, there's like a social pressure to always know what's going on in the world and whatnot. But if you think about it, a lot of what's going on in the news, at least, is mostly negative stuff. I mean, they'll have a cute little puppy saved in a drain pipe story every so often, but most of the time it's some tragedy happened, and the reason is because that draws more eyes, because we're, of course, we're attracted to the craziness. I mean, especially, I mean, it's sad to say it, but like really terrible tragedies like school shootings or whatnot, I'm sure that's a newsroom dream, because they know they're going to get a lot of people tuning in on them, which is kind of a morbid thought. But a lot of people, they stuff their head with these negative messages, whether it's subliminal or just right in your face. And I know with me, sometimes I'm watching it and I'm like, eh, this isn't going to have any effect on me. I just like watching it. But I feel like throughout the day, I'm a little more negative throughout the day when I see more negative things, instead of during days when I'm experiencing more positive type things. Or we had a good day. We just got to talk with someone really cool. I'm going to be more positive after that.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, I used to be kind of think it was silly, all these people that would talk about media fasts or just disconnecting themselves from current events or news or things like that. But I've done it for the past 3 or 4 months. I don't get up in the morning and watch the news. I get up in the morning and select my podcast and pick what topic I want to wake up to in the morning. I don't go to CNN.com anymore. If my mom starts trying to talk politics with me or tragedy with me when I'm on the phone with her, I politely ask her to change the subject, or, you know, tell her I'll talk to her
you
when that's
that
off
to
her
your
mind.
Mom?
Yeah, yeah.
When, you say that to your mom?
Absolutely. I forgot what one of the tragedies was she was talking to me about a few months ago. It was some kind of genocide with lots of dead children, which, I mean, it makes me sound like a terrible person to say this, but she was trying to talk to me about this, and I said, well, and I just told her, I was like, here's my reasoning. What is there anything we can do about it? Obviously the answer is no. If we pay zero attention to it or 100% attention, will we be able to have any kind of effect on any of these, like that specific tragedy or anything like that? And the answer, it's no. So to let that come into your life and let that come into your mind and bring you down, as you mentioned, the news will do, whether you know, however you feel about it, it's inevitably going to have some kind of effect on you. So the ability to disconnect yourself from that and really just put your focus on things that are important to you. I mean, the best thing I ever did was disconnect or unsubscribe from the CNN newsletter, because 3 or 4 times a day I was getting an email about the latest tragedy or the horrible news going on around me, when in reality my life's pretty good. Things are going really well for me. The people I love and care about, things are going well for them. If it's not, I know about it because I'm connected to my friends and family, and I'll be able to help and affect them. But these other things that I have no control over, I don't find out about. And lately, since I've been kind of following that whole media fast mantra, things have really improved. I like it a lot.
I used to get the notifications from CNN on my phone, and I made sure to shut that off. But my parents never talked to me about tragedies like that. So I guess I've never had to tell my mom off like you had to. So,
well, and it wasn't just, it was current event talk, and that was the big news story of the day, and that's what came up.
She's trying to learn about your life. That's why. It's an indirect way to do that. You need to call your mom more, as do I. Anyway, number three, just before we wrap up, we're going a little over on this one. But she talks about how pretty much you have to get used to rejection. It's going to happen. I don't want to say you're going to get rejected your whole life, because that sounds like a negative thought, which would go against number two. But you're going to experience a lot of setbacks, how about that's the word, and you're gonna have people that are gonna say, hey, what you're doing is dumb, or that idea is dumb. You're gonna have people like we think sometimes when we have a down day in downloads, you get that feeling of, oh well, no one cares, we're kind of just this blob in the middle of the internet that no one cares about. And sure, you can sit and dwell on it for a while, and we've had this discussion before, but first, it's feeling sorry for yourself, whatever, isn't going to do anything. And then second is just start thinking about, okay, so what we're doing right now isn't working. What's another step we can take? What can we try out next that maybe it will help? And we've reiterated our strategy a couple times, and we're on another one right now. And if that doesn't work and we don't get to where we want to be, then we move on to the next one. Rejection is just a way to figure out that something's not working so you can get to what's working.
Yeah, and I think one way to look at it is this isn't just a zero-sum game. There's not only winners and only losers. Sometimes there's winners and not winners. And some people might think that's the same thing, but it's really not. When a lot of something's being selected, only one podcast in the entire world can be the number one podcast. And you know what? I saw one the other day that had Mark Cuban on it. And you know what? That was the number one podcast. No one else was going to beat it. No John Dumas, no Dave Ramsey. Nobody was going to beat that episode. It's just a matter of fact. But that doesn't mean the other ones are losers. That just means they weren't selected by the audience or whoever's driving these metrics. They weren't selected as number one. But that doesn't mean you're a loser. So I think we keep talking about mindset because that's one of the focuses of this article. But you have to be in the mindset of, sometimes it's okay to be second place just because you're not first. And I know a lot of people say, anything but first is last, but that's really not how it is. And I think that's a huge mindset shift that a lot of people aren't prepared for, that they kind of have to teach themselves.
So rejection is good. It's not bad. And it doesn't mean you're a loser, even though it sounded like Dan said that he says there's not just winners and losers, but there usually is. There are winners. And there are losers. There's people who do really well on the internet, and there's people who don't do really well. There's not kind of a middle ground. I don't think there is. I think you either do well on the internet or you do really bad on the internet. And usually the people who do bad, they quit. And the people who do good, they keep doing good and better best, right? I'll take that silence as agreement. But we've spent more time than we needed to on this.
Yeah, that's what you need to take from it. That I don't want to argue anymore on this because we have taken too much time, but take that as a disagree, not agree, and carry on.
Exactly. So thank you, Laurel, for the post, and let's get on to round two.
Round two.
For round two today, we have an article by Carrie Wilkerson. She is the Barefoot Executive. And we're going to have her on in the main event. She's a very spirited lassie, so we're going to have a lot of fun with it. But the post we're looking at, it's called A Parable About Getting Things Done. And it's a story about pears, so that's the play on the parable word. But it's a long story, so I'm going to ask Carrie if she'll tell it, because I'm sure she would tell it really well, and I'm not as good in the kitchen. I'm sure Dan's good in the kitchen, but I'm not as good. But basically what she's talking about goals and how to set intermediate type goals. And I know with me, I know we've talked about it before with goals, is that I try and get small things done first and then get up to the large stuff just so there's less on my plate. But she's saying instead, just set benchmarks. Say, okay, I'm going to reach here, and then I'm going to reach here, and then I'm going to reach here. Not even maybe as specific, but just set certain milestones that in your head, subconsciously, you're going to want to achieve, even if there's no real reward after it. It's just, you're just going to achieve. There's no real reward after it. It's just in your head, we as humans were wired to want to achieve and to be proud of ourselves. And that's kind of what she's implementing, a type of a subconscious neuroscience type approach.
Yeah, and I think I maybe read her goal setting tactic a little differently. And we'll definitely, since we're having Carrie on, we can ask her specifically what she meant. But to me, she says she's setting these multiple goals, but maybe they're not progressive. Like, it's not like first I need to get goal one, then goal two, then goal three. It's more like here's three goals that all relate to the same, you know, same process, whatever if I'm building something, if I'm trying to complete a task, I've got three different benchmarks that if I get to any one of the three, I'll be okay reaching. And this kind of, this reminds me of, like, I don't know, when we talk about negotiation topics or something like that, and we've got what's called the MESO, or the multiple equivalent simultaneous offers. And you say any of these three conclusions that I can reach with my negotiation, I'll be happy with. And that's kind of what she's doing here. She's saying any of these three benchmarks that I reach, I'll be happy and I can complete the job, call it complete. However, naturally, one of these three benchmarks she sets are going to be more favorable than the rest. And like you said, they can still be somewhat progressive, even though she can call it complete when she reaches either of the three benchmarks. But if she reaches the first one and then she's like, well, technically, I've told myself that my business would be complete now, or my job would be complete because I've reached this first benchmark. But now that I've, you know, got some headway going, then maybe I can try to reach some of the other benchmarks. So I think you and I looked at it a little differently, but I think kind of the end result might end up being the same.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, now that I think about with the benchmarks, for me, I guess when I look at like a huge picture, I'm not breaking it into benchmarks. I'm kind of like what we talked about, like a little more progressive. So like, for example, when I do the dishes, I usually just say, okay, I'm going to do a couple and I'll leave the rest for tomorrow. And I'll start.
Or for the wife? Is that what it really
no,
is?
No, I do the dishes in this household. That's my job. She does the laundry because that's a little okay. Dirtier. But I'll do like three or something and I'll put them away. And then I'll look and there's like three or four more. And I'm just like, yeah, I might as well just do them now. And then I think about all the free time I'll have tomorrow. So I just, it's just like a psychology type thing, because in my head, I also want to impress Sam and say, hey, look, I did all the dishes. I was only going to do half, but I didn't. I did them all. So some of that may be in play as well. But
One thing I want to get into, and I'm not sure if we'll be able to have time to get into this with Carrie or not, but one of the other things she mentioned just briefly in this article is, and when she tells her story, it'll make more sense. But she talks about as she's working with these pairs, she's in the middle of this job, this task, whatever it is, because you can kind of draw the connections to any of us doing things in our business. But while she's working with these pairs, her hands are all messy. She's in the middle of peeling the pears and has pear juice and pear mush, I could imagine, everywhere. And she's not able to be distracted by anything else, because you can't pick up your phone and check Facebook or pick up your phone and check your email while you've got pear crud all over your hands. And she says that this kind of forced immersion in the task made her way more productive. And I could just imagine, you know, if you're in a situation that you're, you know, doing some kind of task at your job or in your business that completely 100% makes you not able to be distracted, that would be huge. And I'm not sure that kind of thing exists, but what do you think about that? Is, you know, some of these apps or some of these software programs that for, you know, kind of block Facebook from your browser for a certain amount of time, something like that maybe.
Well, I don't use any of those apps because I know I'll probably just go and turn them off anyway. But if I can find certain ways to get immersed in something so that if time starts flying by, that's where if time's flying by, then I'm not thinking about checking Facebook or whatnot. But when time's really crawling, that's when I know, I'll just check over Facebook for a little bit. And then 10 minutes later, I'm gonna just do it again. I'll check, see if anything else happened. So it's if I'm able to find something where I get into a groove. So for example, if I have like a story in my head and I know that if I start writing out the story, not even editing or anything, I'm not even going to notice anything else going on. I'm just going to try and just word vomit everything out. And so I know during that time, I'm not going to be checking anything because I'm not even thinking about it. I have a very one-track mind sometimes. And so if I'm able to find those opportunities, and if you're able to find those opportunities when you feel like time flies by, then I don't know, maybe you make sure you have a certain part of your day where you're doing that activity over and over again just so you're keeping productive. I don't really know how I would do that strategy.
Yeah, you're obviously a little more disciplined than myself. I feel like I have severe ADD, which I'm sure a lot of people in our generation do. But you know, even if I'm immersed in something, I still feel the draw. Whether or not I act on it is a different story, but I still feel the draw, like, maybe I do need to reach for my phone and see if I have an email, or maybe I do need to reach for my phone and see if anyone's sent me a Facebook message that I need to address immediately, right away, emergency now. So I have a hard time preventing myself from doing that.
I wouldn't say I'm very disciplined, because I'm very undisciplined in many areas. But if you're able to find a groove, like, I doubt during an interview you're sitting there checking your phone a lot because you enjoy doing it. Maybe you are. I don't see you all the time. So I don't know. Maybe you are.
Little do you know.
Little do I know. But
and to answer your question, yes, I am fantastic in the kitchen. All right, carry on.
But anyway, we've discussed pairs and all this fun type of jibber jab, but we're going to have Carrie on. She's going to bring some excitement onto the show, and we're going to bring her on in the main event.
It's time for the main event.
For the main event today, we have Carrie Wilkerson. She is the barefoot executive. In her worst moment, she overcame doubt to build a service business while buried in debt, to emerge to build a massive brand, making massive amounts of money, and building a fun global brand, a web show, best-selling book, and other businesses, of course. And on top of that, she's the mom of four children. Can you believe that? Ladies, this is the lady you want to listen to. Carrie, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. And now I'm saying, these days I'm saying four so far, four kids so far.
I was going to ask that if my number, if my research was correct with four, if you had had one recently.
So. Wait, I have not had one, but you know, November is National Adoption Month. And so I am never, my door is never closed. So, you know, you never know. I tend to adopt in multiple. So we're actually talking to about several sibling groups right now. So I may have to update that number soon.
Well, we will add a little overdub in the next year or so if that changes. but before we get started, we always ask if there is a certain podcast or whatnot that tells your story really well. But I know that you have a great video that you narrate that tells your story really well. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. You know, somebody just commented on that video today, and it's been made for several years. I just sat in front of a camera and told my story, and then we added some pictures. Basically, I think there's enough people talking about how much they make. There's enough people talking about what brands they can buy and their luxury vacations. But there's a lot of people putting on a happy face and covering with a mask, too. And I just felt like it was just time for people to hear some raw story, some stuff that went horribly wrong, some stuff that I deal with on a regular basis, and just have, you know, just bare bones me. So and my YouTube channel, which is Barefoot Exec on YouTube, they can find that. There's all kinds of clips and my story. Yeah, so it can be a little tearjerker, but really, maybe you'll find something in it to resonate with and that'll motivate you.
Yeah, I mean, during the video, I mean, it looks like you're about to cry sometimes. It's not like this. You're reading off a teleprompter and like a mono voice. You're actually like you're bringing the emotions. You can read that on your face too. So I mean, it's really well done.
Thanks. I'm pretty against teleprompters for that reason. I never want anybody else putting words in my mouth.
Yeah. Well, Carrie has a great story, so we'll definitely link it up below. But first, we want to dive into your recent post that's up. It's called A Parable, a play on the word with pear and parable, of course. Excellent. About getting things done. And you have a great story about how you were trying to peel pears and whatnot. And well, maybe you should just tell the story because I'm not much good in the kitchen. So,
well, you know, I don't have a food blog. I have a business blog. But a lot of people want to say, well, if Carrie's good at business, that must be all she focuses on. I bet they eat takeout. I bet she doesn't cook. I bet she doesn't nanny. You know, so I do like to blog about normal stuff that I do too. And yeah, I do cook. I'm a darn good cook. And because I have a lot of kids, they like to eat. And not only that, but I've really started looking into more natural stuff and co-ops. Now, I'm never going to have a garden probably. That's not really my gift. But I belong to a food co-op. And we get the opportunity sometimes to buy fruit and vegetables in bulk. So when I was a kid, I learned how to, you know, put up preserves and jelly and stuff like that. And honestly, that's stuff that a lot of my generation just doesn't do, partially because it's so cheap at the grocery store and partially we're just too busy. So I bought 36 pounds of pears with the ambition of putting up pear preserves and pear butter and using those for like the kids' gifts for their teachers at Christmas and also some of the stuff we wanted to do. And also because I have three of my four kids are girls. And I really do like to model for them that you really can do anything you set your mind on. There's nothing you cannot do. It's just a choice of what you will and will not do. So anyway, I had these pears and my life got busy and they were going to get overripe super fast. So this is why the whole story about the pears, you know, just because I had 36 pounds of pears staring me in the face and I had to do something with them.
Yeah. And you had... a lesson from it, which was actually really funny. And one of them is that you set bumper goals, which I find it interesting because I guess for me, I just think of when I see like a task, I just say, okay, I'm going to do the smallest things first and work up to the bigger things. And I know Dan does something different, but you're saying first, actually just think about the goals first and set little goals, maybe not complete the smallest task first, but set certain benchmarks. Is that correct?
Right. So what happened is it was like 9 something at night. The kids are finally in bed, finally spending some time with my husband. And then I'm like, you know what? Tomorrow's going to be crazy busy. The day after is going to be busy. These pairs are going to be bad within the next couple of days. I'm going to have to do this first thing in the morning. So as I'm reaching over to set my alarm, I pull up the recipe on my iPad to make sure I have everything I need. And sure enough, they had to soak overnight in like a special solution of something, which means I had to peel them and everything before bed. My dad, gummit, I'm just, So, you know, much like life and business and all the other things we deal with, I said, okay, I've got some choices here. I could choose a different recipe that doesn't require this prep. You know, I could kind of shortcut this and do something different, or I could choose to wait until tomorrow to prep them. And then that would actually delay the preserves another day. And I was a little concerned they would be bad by then, or I could just get up and do it. And so that's what I chose to do. I chose to get up. Now, I will say in goal setting, in business, in relationships and whatever, this is the missing step, right? We hit the snooze button. I had the opportunity to hit the snooze button on this. And I just chose not to. And I think that's the number one thing that sets me apart from a lot of people, whether it's with preserves or adoption or getting out of debt or losing weight or all the things that I've done. It's a matter of the fact that I got up. I didn't want to, but I got up. I was exhausted. I'd had a crazy week, but there were 24 pounds of pears left. I'd already done some things with some of them, but there were 24 pounds of pears left. So I thought, okay, I don't know if I'm ambitious enough to do all of these. I really don't. Because, you know, you have those moments. You guys have been in school. You guys have worked and you thought, you know, I'm just exhausted. It'd just be easier to curl up in a corner with a pint of ice cream right now. I'm tired. I want to cry. But nope, I'm going to do this. So I thought, all right, I'm going to pick this big bowl and I'm going to peel pears until I fill up this bowl or until the sink is empty of pears. Right. So that's what the bumper goal that I talked about. I'm either or. Now, what happens there, guys, is that gives you power back. So you're feeling powerless because you're feeling up against the wall. And I know this is pears and I know this seems silly, but this really does relate to so many things. You feel powerless. You feel like you don't have a choice. Dadgummit, I have to get up and peel those pears and I really don't want to. And you go with that attitude. But then if you give yourself a choice, okay, I'm going to either fill up this bowl or empty the sink, you immediately have some relief and it becomes a little bit about a game. So has anybody ever played a video game and said, okay, I'm going to stop either after I hit the next level or all my guys die, right? I mean, it's the same kind of thing. I know you guys can relate to that.
Yeah.
So then I chose another bumper goal because I was tired. You know, my back was hurting. I was exhausted. Picked another goal. I looked at the clock and I said, you know what? No matter what, I'm going to stop at 10 p.m. I'm tired. I know my body is about to give out. I'm going to stop at 10 p.m. So then it's like, okay, I'm going to fill up this bowl before 10 p.m. Am I going to empty the sink before 10 p.m. or am I going to go to bed at 10 p.m. and just know that I worked full out until 10? So I had choices. I had some miniature goals and it wasn't as daunting as facing this big box, if that makes sense. It then becomes a game. It becomes a choice. So I had this huge physical and mental shift and I thought, wow, okay, how can we apply this to other things? It doesn't mean it then became fun. It doesn't mean I giggled through the peeling. I didn't. I shouldn't have waited so late. I shouldn't have started when I was tired. I should have planned better. But you know what? Sometimes that just happens. It is what it is. And I just decided to make the best of it. So then what happened next was kind of funny. At 10 p.m., I was excited. I thought, I could stop. But then I looked down and there's only 3 pairs left. Well, you know what happens then? You have that momentum, you have that excitement, your bowl is almost full and overflowing, but you can't leave the three pears, right?
Throw them away.
No, you can't leave the three pears. You can't leave the three pears. So I thought, okay, three more pears. Holy smokes, that's so doable. Three pears, rinsed out the sink. I filled up the bowl. I emptied the sink and it was like 10:04. So win, win, win. And I went to bed, instead of going to bed full of that dread and with the cloud over me, like what I had to do the next day, I was just excited. I did it. They were soaking. And I knew that moved me one step closer, you know, to what I had to get in the jars the next day.
Yeah, I think that's awesome that you kind of select these three options for yourself. Mm-hmm. All three you consider equivalent, you know, so if you meet any one of these three goals, the whole job is done. But obviously there's one goal that maybe is better in the long term than the other. So when you first get to this, maybe the easiest goal, but then you're encouraged, like you said, you have that momentum going to just push through and get to whatever that final thing is. That's awesome. So how can you relate something like that to something you do in business or something you see your students or coach your students to do in business?
Well, writing is an excellent thing. And I'm going to go back and say, you know, the truth is, it's not really about those three goals. It's about that first step of getting out of bed and putting my feet on the floor. Because I was settled in for the night, right? iPad in my lap, TV turned on, husband right there. I was settled in, but I got up. I had to get right past the start point. So let's talk about writing. I know there's probably bloggers listening. There's probably people that want to write books. It's really about, you know, I learned this from Jack Canfield in the book, The Success Principles, years ago. And he said, you know, you need to focus on five meaningful actions a day, whether you write five pages, five articles, send five postcards, do five of something. What happens is, if you stop at five, that's okay. You've met the goal and you can celebrate that. But most of the time, the starting is the hardest obstacle. And once you hit five, you're like, no way. I'm going to do 25 pages. This five really got my juices flowing. I'm going to do 25 pages. So let's talk about, you know, pages of your book. If you wrote five pages a day, if your goal is I'm going to write either for 45 minutes or do five full pages or X amount of words, it's the same thing. And I bet most people are going to hit all three of those things because we just have this innate need to fill in the blanks, to beat ourselves, to please ourselves, and to gain that momentum. So, you know, I remember that Stephen King, I believe, said, I don't know exactly when motivation and inspiration will hit, but I can guarantee you it's not going to hit if I'm not sitting at the typewriter. So it's about setting those bumper goals, you know, or, you know, let's talk about phone calls, people that have to make calls or follow up visits or whatever. Okay. I'm going to, this is a great one that when I'm training salespeople, I say, don't say I'm going to keep making calls until I get five yeses. Set a goal for your no's. I'm going to do calls for an hour and a half or until I hit 10 no's and then I'm done. And the fact is, you can't really hit 10 no's without stumbling on a yes or two along the way, right? So, you know, those are just a couple of instances. If you're looking at running or lifting weights, you know, running, you say, I'm going to go all the way to the end of the street. Or I'm going to do 30 minutes or a mile, whichever it hits first, you know, somebody that's working on a new exercise program. There's so many ways you can apply this, but the biggest victory really is getting out the front door with your tennis shoes on, right? So I think what happens is we all get so exhausted, beat down and worn out from dreading stuff or putting things off or having that negative energy coming back to us. Our delay is actually what's causing our dread. If we just do it, it's such a huge victory.
I find it interesting when you were talking about the teaching the salespeople and going, kind of setting a goal for the no's instead of the yeses. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of a complete mind shift then from probably what, you know, the vast majority of people are doing. And what it somewhat reminds me of, I'm big into lifting weights and things like that. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the coaches will say, well, if you've got to do 10 repetitions of whatever exercise you're doing, don't count 1, 2, 3 through 10. Start at 10 and count backwards. Mm-hmm. And it's just a mindset thing. That's all it is.
Yep.
But can you explain, I don't know if you can or not, what that mindset is? How come that works better than just doing the traditional way?
Well, people dread, back to that salespeople example, they dread the no's. We're trained to dread rejection. We hate the thought somebody's going to tell us no. But if I know that after 10 no's, I get to stop and go play golf, or at 10 no's, I get to go read that novel I've been waiting on, or 10 no's, I'm going to be off for the weekend. It's more of a reward. I'm being rewarded for those no's. I'm not dreading them. I'm collecting them.
Does it make you almost do your job worse, though? Because you know if you do the job worse, you're going to get to know quicker?
I think not if you're a person that's working with integrity, if you're not, you know, if you're really concerned with the results. You know, Seth Godin one time, I don't remember if this was a blog or a podcast I heard, he said, you know, you guys like to look and celebrate my bestsellers, whether it's three or four. I don't know how many he has. My three or four bestsellers. What you don't pay any attention to are the 25 bodies of work that haven't been celebrated. He says, I just keep putting those out there, knowing that the next one that stinks leads to the next one that hits. So, it really is a matter of practice and repetition and doing the work and just getting started. We can't dread the failures. If Edison, you know, or Einstein or Ben Franklin had dreaded their failures and had resisted that, we never would have hit upon electricity and the light bulb and, you know, all the turntable that then led to the work that Jobs did with the iPod. So, you know, if these guys dreaded the nose and dreaded the nose on funding and dreaded the nose on the bulbs they blew and all those things, then we wouldn't have had any progress in these areas. You just really have to set the bumper goals, shift your mind to where you're winning. And so I'm winning at collecting nose. Awesome. Guys, here's a great example I love to use. Babe Ruth, right? Baseball, Hall of Famer, the same year that he was in, that he broke the record for home runs. Do you know what else he broke the record for?
Strikeouts.
So how, you know, that's huge. You cannot be the home run king without also being the strikeout king. Wayne Gretzky says you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. We're so worried about missing the shot, we don't take the shot. So be excited about those missed shots, because you can't miss every shot. It's just not possible if you're really aiming. So I'm getting a little fired up about that. I'll dial it back a little.
Well, so that kind of speaks on the whole risk taking idea.
Yeah, risking. So, you know, one of my very first blog posts 6 years ago, maybe, I grew up with three brothers. Adore my brothers. I believe I'm the businesswoman that I am because of my brothers. I remember very distinctly, I was about six and I'm on the roof with my 8-year-old brother. He's like, we're going to jump, Care. We're going to jump. I'm like, I don't think it's a good idea. I really don't think it's a good, I think we're going to get hurt. I know, no, there's bushes down there. They'll break our fall, Care. Come on, let's jump. He's like swinging his arms, getting ready. I'm like, no, I think maybe we need somebody down there to catch us. I'm weighing all the risks, right? And Kevin jumps. And hurts himself, of course. And he didn't break anything, luckily, but he hurt himself. I wait for Dad to come rescue me off the roof. I get down safely. Meanwhile, I'm saying, see, I knew you were going to get hurt. See, I knew that was going to happen. And he says, yeah, but you know what? I think if I jump off at a different angle and twist my body differently, it'll work out better. Let's try that again. And I thought, holy smokes, this is it. That's my mindset in business. Now, while I'm still not ready to jump off a roof, the mindset in business is, and this is one way that men and women tend to do business differently, is that the women are weighing the risks and trying to avoid the hurt and avoid the rejection and avoid public embarrassment and avoid the failures. Whereas the guys are like, the more I jump off, even if I get hurt, no matter what I break, I'm going to figure out eventually how to do it right. You know, the Wright brothers never would have been the Wright sisters. We still would be grounded if we were waiting for women to figure out flying, right? Because there just was no way to do that without crashing your plane so many times. Anyway, so yeah, it's a lot about risk, and you have to be comfortable with some risk. But here's the deal. A lot of it is fake risk. That's the secret. So if somebody says no, So what? It hurts my feelings, but why? It doesn't take money out of my bank account when they say no. It just doesn't put any in. It doesn't publicly humiliate or embarrass me. And even if it does, guess what? There's people like Paris Hilton and Britney and people like Miley that are doing way more embarrassing stuff that's going to distract people super fast. So the risk is mostly perceived. It's mostly fear we create, and we just have to get over ourselves and realize we're not the center of everybody else's universe and just do it anyway. The rewards are so much better.
So overcoming this risk, is it more of just don't overthink something and just start doing it?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Is that the key? Is that the formula right there?
I believe that thought is overrated. I really do. You know, I didn't think too hard about getting in business. Now, I do tell people I got into business without a plan. I loved my career. I loved what I did, but I adopted two children. So literally overnight, I lost interest in my career, but the bank did not lose interest in my paycheck. So I quit without a plan, and I've now spent 15 years helping people know not to do that without a plan. You really do need a plan, but, I didn't calculate risks. I didn't overthink, like, what if I get into this business and it's the wrong business? I just thought, well, let's try this. Let's see how this works. I can always move into something else. I can always try something different or learn something different. Anybody that's read my book has read about my dad who bought the Time Life series of home improvement books and learned how to put a second story on our house in Elizabeth City, North Carolina. Our house was too small. Here's his thought process, and you'll figure me out by listening to my dad. Okay, here's his thought process. We're in the military. We have 5 people in our family, but we don't want to live on base, so we buy a house, but it's too small. So the solution is put a second story on the house. Uh-oh, I don't know how to build. I better find a book or something that'll teach me how to do that. Oh, look, here's the Time Life series of books. I'm going to buy those and put a second story on the house. Step 4 is, look, I put a second story on the house because I read these books and figured it out. I mean, that's really how we work in my family. That was 30 some odd years ago. He added 2 bedrooms and a bathroom, second story on our house. And now he still carries those books around and rebuilds orphanages and hurricane ravaged cities and even, you know, dollhouses for the grandkids because he figured it out. He said, here's the problem. There's a book with the solution. I'll read it and I'll figure it out. So did he ever miswire anything? Yes. Did he have the roof off at the wrong time during rainy season? Yes. Did he have to redo some things and call in professional help sometimes? Yes. But guess what? We still ended up with a second story on the house. He still figured out how to do it, and the reward outweighed the risk.
So, okay. So when I was doing research on you, one thing you said is if I'm being you for a second, if I can't make money with something in 60 to 90 days, I'm not going to do it. So doesn't that kind of put you into a more, because I know you're all about helping people, but doesn't that put you more into a financial mindset instead of a value type mindset?
Well, when I first started, I wasn't a financial mindset. I didn't start to help people. I started to help my 2 kids that I was staying home with. Period. End of story. I didn't have a passion for business. I didn't have a big life's mission for business. I needed to replace my paycheck so that my kids could get the therapy they needed and learn that I was their new mom. Period. End of story. I don't think business is all about the big global good. And I know that's not the touchy-feely, politically correct answer, but it is what it is. And a lot of times we have to get passionate about paying our bills first before we can hit that entitlement mentality of, oh, I want to love what I do. Well, you know what? Why don't you love who you do it for first? And then we can figure out you doing something you love once your bills are paid. So there's that. But the 30, 60, 90 day rule with me is this. If I'm going to borrow money from my family finances to pay for a program or a product or a service to grow my business, I need to know that I can make ROI on that, return on my investment within before the credit card bill comes.
Well, tell us how that process works.
Well, first of all, that means I focused on one new strategy, one product, one conference, one mentor at a time. I'm not part of the club that I buy everything I get an email about or that I invest in lots of different stuff at a time. I think, you know, if my dad had bought the Time Life series of books, plus some Nightingale Conant series of records, plus studied a program on how to hire the right contractors. Those are conflicting things. Those are not all going to get him in the same place productively. You just can't focus on all those different things at the same time. So he focused on that one series of books. So if I'm really focusing on lead generation or really focusing on a podcast like what you guys are doing, and I want to have a good podcast, a profitable podcast, I want to do it the most efficient way possible, I don't need to also be investing in video marketing and lead generation and how to create information products all at the same time. I really need to buckle down and focus and implement that. I know for a fact that hundreds of thousands of people bought that same series my dad did. And I bet 25% of them returned it before ever doing with it, anything with it. I know some of them are really proud of it on their bookshelf because it's such a pretty set. It really was a gorgeous set of books. And I know that a few people looked at it in order to rewire a plug or, you know, maybe change the tile in their bathroom. But there are not a lot of people that took it to the extent my dad did. And why did he? Well, one, he had a really clear goal. Two, he was committed not to waste family resources. And three, he implemented, focused, and took action on those materials before he distracted himself with anything else.
Well, kind of translating this into the personal brand that you've built for yourself, you mentioned, you know, doing one thing at a time. But looking at your brand now, you have YouTube videos and a book and a website and in-person conference that you host. This whole, and that kind of follows this whole be everywhere mentality. Like anywhere that people are looking for your information, they can find it. But that goes against a little bit that doing one thing at a time. Or did you build it just step by step by step?
I built it one thing at a time. I didn't start a conference until I already had an online presence. I didn't do videos while I was also doing blogging. If people really pay attention, I didn't blog until several years in. I focused on email marketing first and foremost, and then building my brand through audio interviews and teleconferences. And then I added in video. But if you look at my videos, the majority of them were all created within a year and a half, 2 year period of time. And then I drip released them. But I created them. That was all the content I was creating at that time was video. So I have done it one thing at a time. When I did my book, I took several months off and that's all I did was my book. And my book fell into my lap because I had focused on video and my social media presence and all those things one thing at a time, but I did stack it. So when we're babies, we don't learn to walk and run and crawl and talk all at the same time. We start with rolling. And then we use those skills and we stack on some new skills to start crawling or scooting. And then we use all those cumulative skills to start crawling or pulling. And then we move and stack using existing skills. Business is the same way. The problem is when you try to learn it all at the same time and do it all at the same time. It's just like, you know, a 6-month-old that's trying to learn to jump hurdles. It's just going to be defeating and overwhelming. And you don't have all the skills necessary for that. So yeah, I do a conference once a year and I have to focus on that, but I'm not creating new videos right now. I'm not creating new podcasts right now, not creating a new book right now. You know, it really does have to be all in good time. So when I work with my personal clients, I teach them to use a motive matrix, and the motive matrix helps you know what to work on, what to focus on at each point in your business. And I always suggest they reevaluate that every 3 to 6 months. But when you focus on one thing at a time, it really is so much more effective than if you're trying to be in all those places. So first, my very first strategy was radical visibility. And you see the results of that now. I do seem like I'm everywhere. But the fact is, I'm here and I'm barefoot and I'm in my office and I had lunch with two of my kids today. And, you know, it's the best of all worlds. But that there's the strategic radical visibility is what helped with that at first.
Well, you mentioned a lot of the students you're working with, and I'm guessing they are maybe similar to a good number of our listeners who are either just getting started things or just building whatever it is that they've started. And that can be a confusing time. And you mentioned the matrix that your students use, but what is your kind of metric to say, okay, I focused on this particular aspect for a fair amount of time. Now I'm ready, or now my business is ready to progress to the next thing, or no, maybe it's not ready. How do you decide, you know, which of it, those two it is?
Well, when I go through my motive matrix, I decide what benchmarks I'm going to look at. So I believe that you can really only pursue one primary and one secondary goal in your business at a time. And I don't think it's always money. I think depending on the stage of your business, sometimes it's leads, sometimes it's product creation, sometimes it's credibility, sometimes it's infrastructure, and sometimes it is indeed cash. And I have a really neat thing where they all start with the letter P, but you know what? We're just for the sake of it all, I'll just say what it is. It is what it is. So I believe you choose one primary. So you guys might say, hey, Carrie, really what we're focused on right now is lead generation, because we're working on a product, but we know we don't have anybody to sell it to until we have a good lead. So lead generation would be number one. And number two for us would then be product development. So then I would say every decision you have to make, every opportunity that crosses your desk, every inbox message, every social media, everything should relate to your primary goal in your business right now, which is what? Lead generation. How do we get them on your email list? How do we convert the people on your social media or on your podcast to your email list? How do we get them there? Because once we get them there, then we can put them through your product funnel. And then once you put them through your product funnel, what's the result of that? Profit, right? Then that leads to cash. So is cash is always a good scorecard for how our business is doing, but your goal right now might be leads. But then I would say to you, you know, as your coach, okay, so how many leads? What's your goal for your list? Do you want 1,000 people on your email list? Do you want 10,000? You want 20,000? And you're not allowed to say to me as many as possible. That's not a number. It's really not, you know, you can't say that. So you have to say, you know what? Let's build up to 2,500 people on our direct email marketing list within the next 10 weeks. And then we can work on that. Then at the end of the 10 weeks, when you hit that goal or surpass that goal, then we say, okay, now let's look and see now what's your next motive. Is your next motive cash or to finish this product or to set up your systems? Because now it's just like that baby learning to crawl and walk. Now you've got your lead generation systems in place and set up, and now we can start putting those people through your funnel, through the product you created, and now start turning that into profit. So, you know, those are just some of the things you can decide what to work on at what time. But the problem is, those of you that are listening that are new or learning or want to be or stuck or frustrated, which is 95% of people in business for themselves, a lot of it's because you're trying to do too much at one time. You don't know what your end goal is. And you're listening to too many people tell you what your focus should be. So the number one thing you should do is turn off the noise. Unsubscribe from most of the lists you're on. Quit listening to all the gurus. Pick somebody you resonate with, has values that you admire, that is in a place that you want to be, and that you resonate with, and listen to them or model them or watch them and see what is, you know, one thing they tend to focus on and what are things, you know, that they don't focus on. So we do get caught up, guys, in being too busy and too productive and too hyper frenetic about our activity and crossing things off our list that we're really not doing anything at all, but making a show of how busy we are. And we're still just not accomplishing anything.
Well, moving on to another topic I wanted to touch on. A lot of people, they have a limiting belief, and I know I've had it before, is that they're not an expert in something. But you have a great story when you worked with like your CPA. I guess you got in like a webinar with them and you were able to leverage their expertise and make, I think it was like 15 grand or something off of that relationship. Can you tell that story for us?
Yeah, and you know, I call that kind of the Oprah model.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, the Oprah model, that's what you called it.
Yeah, because, and let's talk about Oprah and Montel and even Ellen and some of the other talk show hosts. Honestly, what is their expertise?
They talk to famous people.
Their expertise is finding credible people with answers. Their expertise is asking questions on behalf of their audience. But as a result, they have this great halo effect that, oh, if Oprah recommends my book, it must be good and other people will buy it. Well, you know, really, is Oprah a literature expert? No, but she has leveraged other people's expertise and it has bled onto her. So when I started, I was just a girl with a high six-figure business in desktop publishing and virtual services before being a virtual assistant was cool. And I just was lonesome working at home and thought other people probably were too. And I was tired of having to research every single software. I thought there had to be a place, there needed to be a gathering spot for people that worked at home to just look at a couple of resources and not have all the same clutter to cut through. I thought there has to be a place for people to connect so that they don't feel like they're the only one doing this. I'm just going to throw up this website and just see if it resonates with people. But I didn't feel like, I'm sure not an accountant, I'm sure not an attorney, I'm not an expert parent. I mean, I'm a good parent, but I wouldn't necessarily say you need to model me. I've lost a lot of weight, but I wouldn't necessarily say, you know, you want to model me in that either. I think everybody has their own journey in those things. But I did think, you know, if Oprah can find people that are experts in the stuff her audience wants to know, I'm going to find people that are experts in the stuff my audience wants to know. So my very first teleclass, I was terrified of the technology, which is funny now because I've done hundreds of teleclasses now. I used freeconferencecall.com, talked to a small business CPA who had a product where she would help small business owners. We charged $27 per seat for people to be on this 90-minute call where she talked about the 11 things the IRS doesn't want small business owners to know, why you're overpaying your taxes by $3,000 to $5,000 a year. And, basically, I think we made $5,000 in upfront tuition on the call. She sold her program at the end of the call, and we made another $5,000 on new clients for her. And then I continued to, I had that call typed out and then bundled it with the MP3. And I know I sold at least $5,000 to $7,000 more in that out of my shopping cart over the next year. And let me just tell you, I don't even file my own taxes. I sign the tax form, but that's all I do. And I have to do that because I'm a business owner. I don't keep my receipts. You know, my husband and the bookkeeper do that. So I am not the expert in taxes, but I made money off bringing the expert to my audience, which means then you have to have an audience, which is why the very first goal I had for my business was lead generation and building an audience. See how it really does all come back to that. It's kind of crazy. All comes back to that. All comes back to people resonating with you and being willing to listen. And that was the first of hundreds of teleclasses. And as a result, after about 6 to 8 of those, people started seeing me as the go-to girl for knowing who to know and knowing who to talk to. And I became the Oprah for my audience in the small business or work at home market. And because I'm just so dang honest, I mean, good grief. I'm not all about brands. I'm not all about status. I'm not all about, you know, being proper and even the right grammar, even though I'm certified to teach English. It's just about being who you are and being comfortable and rocking what I do in on my own terms in my own space, which is what the brand The Barefoot Executive is all about.
There you go. I love it. Well, Carrie, we appreciate you taking the time, a fellow Texan as well. So where can we go to check out the posts and everything about you?
Well, I bet you guys are going to hit them up with links, but CarrieWilkerson.com is my home base. If you want to connect with me on Twitter, it's also Carrie Wilkerson. And then Facebook is Barefoot Executive. That's the business page where all those posts and that yummy goodness is there. So Carrie Wilkerson's where you'll find links probably to everything else.
Love it. Carrie, we thank you for coming on. Thank you for your passion, for your words to the ladies, and thank you for your time.
Awesome. Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
Well, that's going to do it for this week's episode of the Entrepreneur Showdown. Thank you so much for joining us. And we'd love it if you join us every Monday morning to hear the latest episode of the Entrepreneur Showdown podcast. Remember, the place to go to find the show notes of today's episode and a whole lot more is www.entrepreneurshowdown.com. And while you're there, leave us your email address to find out about upcoming guests, latest episode releases, and a whole lot more.